What's good, everybody? It's your boy Nico coming to you live.
It's your boy Jay.
Welcome to the symphony of the what? Go ahead and say it, man.
The podcast.
We in the shadow realm. This is the symphony of the shadow realm podcast, y'all. Oh, waiting for the man to say that. So, we bringing y'all some of this good. We got three topics coming to you today. We're going to talk about Revenge of the Dreamers. First, we're going to talk about the new Pokemon Mewtwo Strikes Back Evolution movie. And then, what else are we going to be talking about?
Like I said, we get into the Revenge of the Dreamers album and the playlist. You know, how you feel about it ever since its release. And then after that, we'll get right into the Cyberpunk 2077 trailer release and gameplay.
So, basically, we're going to start off, and I'm just going to get some impressions of, to me, a lot of people, they hold the Pokemon, the first movie, Mewtwo Strikes Back, they hold that movie very near and dear to their heart. There's a lot of nostalgia there.
I'm one of those people.
They had a big campaign. They had a lot of toys, McDonald's, Burger King, any place you name, they had toys. They had great, great toys. They had the gold holographic cards that were in the plastic. They had all kind of toys in every kid's meal. They had posters everywhere. They had a rare Mewtwo card at the movie if you got the tickets early.
Yeah, special cups.
Everything, you name it, they had merchandise for it. That movie touched a lot of people, made a lot of people cry. Everybody knows the scene with Ash trying to stop the fight between Mew and Mewtwo.
Yeah, turning to stone.
All the Pokemon fighting their own their own clones and all that type of stuff. The movie really hit a lot of people's hearts. So a lot of people are wondering why they decided to make this movie CGI and remake it and remaster it for a new generation.
Again, I was one of those people. I didn't understand it at first.
So, just based off of your first impressions of the original movie and you watching the trailer, how do you feel about this movie seeing the CGI trailer now that they have the final trailer and the movie just released today in Japan?
It raised up a lot of questions, honestly, just because I'm not even gonna lie, I fell off of Pokemon many, many years ago, and with different there was different characters that's been introduced to Pokemon ever since in different worlds and traveling across different journeys. I believe Ash, Misty, and Brock is part of the first generation of Pokemon, so I'm not quite sure why they would revive it. Actually, it kind of just I feel like it could have just stayed in the vault. They didn't change anything about it. They basically just recreated it with the CGI effect. There's no benefit I see about this movie except for the fact that it's made in CGI. Unless they wanted to go back and kind of reintroduce that very popular movie that touched so many souls and lives to, you know, the new generation that it is now. I guess kind of give a little backdrop on Ash's journey and how they came about and all that whatnot for those people who may have not even knew about or let alone seen Mewtwo Strikes Back.
Right. So
I didn't see too many benefits from it. I mean, the animation and, you know, the CGI, it looks great and everything. I don't actually see it benefiting anybody but the viewers who are in Japan. People are going to go see it regardless just because it's a nice throwback. But I think that's all it really is. It's just a recreated nostalgia, basically. That's how I feel about it. But it looks good, like I said. But there's not too many benefits other than the fact that it was in CGI mode. So
a lot of people all over the internet, all over the world, they have mixed feelings about it. I don't know what numbers the movie is doing today in Japan right now, but I feel like, yeah, you can introduce the movie to a new audience, but did you have to make it in CGI? Couldn't you just have done it in a different art style? Because there's a lot of anime movies that have been remastered and re-released on Blu-ray or DVD, and nobody had a problem with that. So now, I just feel like it's redundant. And I've I watched the trailer with an open mind and open heart, and yeah, the graphics look great, like you said, but I feel like the movie looks more like a video game than an actual movie. Yeah. It looks like what you would see for CGI in a video game. It doesn't look like an actual film. Yeah. It doesn't look like something that you would go sit and watch for a couple minutes, or not a couple minutes, but a couple hours, yeah, and you know, say, oh, this was a good film, or this was a good recreation. Right. It's not like it's live action. It's not like it's bringing anything really dramatically new to the table, mm-hmm, other than Mewtwo's new armored form, mm-hmm, which was in the old movie. Everybody remembers when Mewtwo had the armor on because they had him running tests to see, yep, how proficient he'd be in combat,
basically.
And literally, people said the armor looks to be too much. It looks like a Digimon. It didn't need to be remade. The original armor held up through time. I know a lot of people that literally, they have posters of that original armored Mewtwo image from the original movie. That's a very... You're messing with a lot of people's nostalgia. And it's weird. Because it's like, why? And the only logical explanation that I can come to after what you said and after me watching it is that they did it so they could add content to either Pokemon Go, mm-hmm, or to the new game that's coming out on the Switch. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing that I can see. Introducing people who don't know much about the original 151, or they don't know the origin story of Mew and Mewtwo, mm-hmm, being her clone, all that type of stuff. That's the only thing that I can see, is they're trying to reintroduce the original 151 to a new audience and touch a new audience's heart.
Yeah,
it's not for us, I don't feel.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those of us who grew up and watched it in 2000 and all that, when it was released, like I said, great movie to this day. Well, some of us will probably still go watch it just because, you know, when it does release to America, I'll probably go catch it just because when's the last time we actually sat up there and watched Pokemon movie 2000? Like, we did it. We haven't done it in a while. Maybe there's some people out there that exist that has, but, you know, the point still stands. But like you just said, like, I don't honestly see the point, except for they're just honestly just trying to get a quick bag, honestly. You know, like I said, Nico, you brought up a couple good points, besides the one point that I made. Like, they're just very, there's very few valid points as to why they rekindled this movie, if you will. So I just feel like it's just, honestly, I just feel like it's a money move. It's a money move, and it's just something they did just because they can.
Big cash grab.
Basically. just like a why not move, so. Yeah,
if they threw something in there that surprises us, I will be pleasantly wowed. You know what I mean? But as far as what we've seen, there ain't nothing new. We watched a music video. There ain't nothing new.
And I think that would have been a bad movie if they put something new in there. In there anyway. Like you brought up with the armored Mewtwo, I didn't have no.
People support. Didn't like that.
I'd have huge issues with it. It ain't like he was sitting in the lab looking like a Gundam Wing character or anything like that.
That's facts.
But at the same time, even if they did introduce new concepts with it, then you really have fans in an uproar, because I don't think some of you may understand that the Pokemon movie 2000, when it dropped, was so big and did so well, and you'd be definitely breaking the rose-colored glasses that a lot of us would be wearing at that moment. You know, because, you know, it's not always good to mess with people's nostalgia. And when it was a movie that was basically very perfect at the time when Pokemon was really up there and incredibly popular, like, you just don't want to tamper with certain things. And they did it. Like we said, they just basically changed up the animation. They changed up the, you know...
One or two things, really.
And then that was it. So, I got nothing else. Yeah, let's moving on. I say it'll be... If it hit theaters in America... It'll be in theaters, obviously, for like a month, and then it'll do somewhat okay, and then it'll go away.
Yeah, I feel like that with a lot of anime movies that are not big. Like, if we compare this to My Hero Academia or the Dragon Ball Z Broly movie, the super movie that came out, I think that was the third super movie to come out. That movie was spectacular. Me and you actually went to the theater to see that. That was fire.
That was amazing.
Pure fire. It wasn't it wasn't a recreation of the original Broly movie. It was integrating the character from the non-canon Dragon Ball Z films into the actual Dragon Ball lore.
Origin and everything.
It was fire. The fight scenes were on point. Mm-hmm. The music was great. Mm-hmm. Everything fit. But this just seems like a quick cash grab to reach some new audience.
Yep.
And it's only going to stay in theaters for a couple weeks. And then it's going to fade into obscurity.
Yep.
And some kids might get to see it and they'll be like, oh, I like that. And then they're going to get it on DVD.
It's going to be something nice to watch when it gets to the dollar theaters.
Exactly. Next up, we're going to be discussing our impressions of Revenge of the Dreamers 3.
First of all, it's Dreamville all day, every day. I just want to say that real quick. You're looking at a Dreamville. Well, not looking, but you're hearing a Dreamville stand right now heavily, you know. Shout out to everybody from Dreamville. And you stack like the Warriors. So, you know, that's not going to make my opinions about the album biased, but do know that, you know, I follow all of their music heavily.
So we just watched Sean C. give a review of the album. He gave it a 6. And I pretty much agreed with everything he said through his review up until that score. I felt like it was a little too low.
No, that score was low as shit. I felt disrespected. I actually choked. He gave a score of a 6 out of 10.
He gave it a 6, y'all.
A 6 out of 10. And I was appalled just because it wasn't too far off for what I would give it. I honestly give it like a 7. I'll give it like a 7.8. And the production was
phenomenal.
The production was fantastic. The beats were crazy. Even some of the tracks that I tended to not skip past, but kind of fast forward through a little bit, if you will, or didn't capture my musical ear. I appreciated the sounds. I appreciated how the beats were directed, the production basically. Even though for some of the artists that were lesser known, who I didn't know or just now got introduced to, like Baby Rose or Baby Rose, hopefully I'm saying either one of those correctly. I am not a person who dug deep into SmiNo. And then there was a couple other people on there. I barely even heard from Loot, and Loot is on Dreamville, but Loot hasn't dropped a whole lot of projects. But just some of those few examples. They put out great quality work. You can tell the environment they were in on some of the songs. For instance, like 1993. You can tell that was basically like a smoke session type of song, a vibe and a chill, all the way down to Wells Fargo, where, you know, everybody just basically came in on high energy and it was turned the fuck up, basically. Each track gave you something different, and it told a story of the everyday production that went on in the Dreamville Studios. And I appreciated that. It literally took you on a ride. But, you know, some of the songs, I can understand why this score was a little bit low, but not that low. What Sean C. did, that was just blatant disrespect. Even though his job is to critique, I feel like he critiqued with somewhat of a own personal, not vendetta, but just like it had something against it. And I think it had a lot to do with the new generation of rappers that was featured on Revenge of the Dreamers 3, such as Ski Master, Slum God, Smart Pope, Reese LaFlair, and maybe a few others, even Guap Dad 4000. But as we all know, from our Cole fans out there, that he's reaching out more to the young generations, the new generation of rappers now.
Trying to integrate.
And that was the whole purpose of the KOD album, actually. So, like, it was appreciative. Now, I personally think that some of those people could have been left off. There were a few tracks that had, like, maybe 9 people featured, but it was a 3.5-minute song. So everybody had, like, 6 bars and then left and never came back on the album again. I didn't like that too much. You had some people that fit the track perfectly and some people that was like, okay, they could have been left off. Not only did they not fit the track with their flow, it was very short. The timing was very short and it didn't match the aura or the energy that the song was giving off. So, but what album is perfect? You know, what we probably can name a few. Shout out to 2014 Forest Hills Drive. Not one track was skipped on there, but you get my point. Oh, so, man. Revenge of the Dreamers 3 was a nice collaboration. And as of right now, they're number 1 on the Billboard's list with that many collaborations, and they're definitely doing numbers. They're doing numbers, and they are reaching new heights and new limits, and I couldn't be more proud, especially to the Dreamville OGs. Every Dreamville OG that was on there snapped and did their part on that album, point blank, period.
I feel like for a bunch of people getting emails randomly to go hit up a studio in another state and all collaborate together for 7 days in the studio, and everybody flew in from all over the United States
and
even other people from other worlds, not other worlds, but other parts of the country, because they were on tour and they stopped what they were doing to come join in the festivities. I feel like you created this piece in a week. The production is hitting. Everything is on point. A lot of the songs are lacking because of those things that you said, as far as I wanted some people to have longer verses and some people didn't feel like they meshed with the idea of the song. And that bothered me and kind of disturbed my ears. But I understood where they were coming from and why they put them on those tracks or left off certain verses. There's one song.
In my mind, I know a lot of editing and remastering was being done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Seven days?
I mean, it got pushed back like four times anyway. So.
They had, and we know that they recorded way more songs than the 18 songs that were actually on the actual album itself.
I feel like it was three times as much.
And so with that being said, there's 18 tracks on the whole album, and we know they recorded at least 40 to 50 songs. And there's even one song where Jid was literally about to get off, and we heard a snippet of that song online, and they cut the song out, and they just kind of faded it out. So a lot of people think that a lot of these songs are going to show up on other people's albums, or they might release something else, like a side Revenge of the Dreamers EP or something that has the lost tracks, or people are going to put these songs on their albums. They even featured a couple songs from, like, let me see, what's the one? Swivel. Swivel was actually supposed to be off of Mirror Land from Earth Gang. So I feel like some of these songs were filler, and some of these songs could have not been on this album. Like, Middle Child came out a while ago.
Yeah, that didn't need to be on there, but nobody expected that to happen. And so I feel like there was some production issues that happened, or some tracks that didn't get clearance from everybody and didn't get a chance to get it fully mastered. So Cole probably had to go in there and put a couple of filler songs in there to make it just do, because he felt like, well, it's not lengthy enough, or he wanted to basically satisfy the fans for as long as we had to wait for Revenge of the Dreamers 3. Because, man, when did we first hear about Revenge of the Dreamers 3?
Sometime last year. Sometime last year.
It was like at least five.
Secret project, and then people kept hinting at it.
Yep, there was 4 to 5 updates about it being pushed back. And I remember hearing about it like late April, saying it was going to come around my birthday, which is like first week of May. And I was like, I was ecstatic. And that was actually like the third announcement. And then it came again, and it said late May. Then it came again, and it said sometime mid-June. And now here we are in mid-July, and it finally dropped. So,
yeah. I feel like if they would have had more time in the studio, they would have dropped more tracks. This would have been a double album. This would have been a 2-CD album. It would have probably had double the songs on it. Some of these filler songs would have been more completed, but they were working under a time crunch. And for what was produced, it was good. A lot of people got recognition that would either still be considered low-key, you know, buzzing artist, or artists that have a certain reach to a certain demographic. Mm-hmm. And now, that demographic is going to grow, because other people who never heard of them or never gave them a chance because they had a preconceived connotation of what that artist was bringing to the table. They heard something that they might have been interested in that stuck out. I know a lot of people were interested with, like, Baby Rosé's voice was very, very sultry and unique. Her singing was amazing. It accented Ari Lennox's voice very perfectly. Boz was killing it on the whole album.
Oh, my God, yes. And let me say, Mareba, just, even though she was only on PTSD, one of the best tracks, by the way, top five. Well, like, she just came through and just killed it, even if it was just a hook. And I think she did a verse on there, a small verse, but just in love with her. Like, just the voice. So relaxing and soothing, and it just matches the beat. And then you have, I believe, Omen was on that track as well.
Omen was on a couple tracks. Omen stood out. A lot of people didn't expect.
A lot of people were waiting for Omen to just come back on the scene. For my Dreamville fans, we know Omen has been MIA for a good ass minute since Revenge of the Dreamers, the early days of Revenge of the Dreamers 2. So he's definitely been MIA. And now he came back. And man, that was definitely Dreamville dropped the gem with that one. And we highly appreciated it for it.
I'm irritated by the people who've been slandering Earth Gang. Y'all gonna get off Earth Gang's back. When Mirrorland drops, I want y'all to swallow your words. Every song that they were on was good. Y'all mad, and then because think about it. Look how many albums have come out for people who've been disrespecting. Look how many times. A lesser known band or a rap duo. Let's go back in time to Outkast. So we have Earth Gang, right? They're from Atlanta. They're obviously inspired by Outkast because they're a rap duo.
Well, of course, they're like 2.0.
And Jid is close to them. They hooked up a while ago and they worked on a few projects and they became really close friends. And if you just go back in their discography and you listen to their stuff, they have hard-hitting lyrics, they have very, very good production. A lot of people say that they don't feel like they belong with the continuity of Dreamville, and I would say that that's a gross understatement, and they do. A lot of people said that they should be switched to another record label.
That makes absolute zero sense.
I feel like you're supposed to have diversity when it comes to a label. You're supposed to have people that can do some of everything. That's what this album was representing. That there's a little something for everybody on this album. Whether you're into trap music, whether you're into lyrical raps, whether you're into old school hip hop and R&B.
And that's what Cole goes to look for when he recruits. He's looking for differences. He's looking for that could play to their strengths, providing something different, because that was his whole purpose, was to mix and master so many different tracks with so many different sounds. And it's Revenge of the Dreamers, man, like people's time to shine. And even the penmanship on Revenge of the Dreamers 3, Boss did like 3 entirely different verses. Jid was gonna be Jid plays to his strength, but even Jid switched it up. And what was this track with T.I. called?
Ladies.
I mean, that was something entirely different. Like, it was much different from when he did Strawberries with BJ did the Chicago Kid.
It was a very unique, very Atlanta gentleman type of song where it's like they're talking about their experiences with different types of ladies and just like being a rapper and dealing with different women, being in different positions in their life, having different types of relationships. That stood out to me. I feel like as far as everybody on this album, people are jumping down the trap rappers and the drill rappers. There's not drill rappers on here, but there's a lot of trap rappers or people who don't. Yeah. Younger generation. That's the thing.
I'm not gonna lie. Like, I don't check for Smoke Perp. I don't check for Reese LaFleur. Like, I don't check for those niggas. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and real quick, I just want to say, I have no quarrels with Earth Gang whatsoever. They murdered Sacrifices, literally back in the top 5, one of the best songs. I just know that they're touring all over the world right now, and they don't got not one stop in America, and I got serious beef with that. But that's my only beef for Earth Gang. Like, come to America, please, and come somewhere close to the North. But that's it. Back to what we were saying, like the new generation rappers. That's the biggest thing.
He's trying to bridge the gap between generations and show that.
And it's the biggest thing.
They can collaborate and they can work together and they don't have to be at each other's throats, doubting each other, disrespecting each other, having Twitter beefs, all that type of stuff.
They can
all come together, make a consistent album that sounds good, and you can vibe to it and you can listen to it back to back. You can ride to it in the car, you can bang it in the club, or you can just listen to it if you're just trying to vibe or just chill with your girl on the couch and listen to some music. Like, there's something for everybody here. It's like going to the carnival. And that's exactly what they did. They you feel like it's, that's what I said. This album is an experience. And so when you said a 7.8, I think I would give it a 7.8 too. Just because it's almost an 8, but it's not quite.
Exactly.
And that's just because they didn't, it was a time crunch. Exactly. They worked with the time that they had. They worked with the artists that they had. Exactly. They brought things to the table that nobody else has done. They took a chance and they took liberties with it.
It was a time crunch. I got 3 to 4 things, actually. Time stipulations, extended verses, because some people should have definitely spit longer than what they had.
Some of these songs should have been longer, let's be honest.
I have a small issue with some of the tracks with the rotation of rappers. I believe should have been placed differently to keep going with the continuous flow and the overall production of the song, basically riding the wave, riding the beat, and just the amount of rappers that was on particular songs. And it's really only about 3, which is Costa Rica, Don't Hit Me Right Now, and even Oh Wow, which is one of my lesser favorite ones. I had no idea who Zoink Gang was or Key. I do know Maxo Cream, but other than that, I just don't believe that any track, I don't think any track should have more than 5 artists. And if you're going to have 5 artists, then I believe, in my opinion, the track needs to be at least 4.5 minutes. I don't think any track on here went past 3, 4 minutes.
The longest song was Sacrifices, and that's just because that was a very hard-hitting piece. That was a very emotional song.
Yeah, and they talked about a lot of content.
J. Cole was talking about a lot of his personal life and dealing with the... his personal beefs with Kanye West and a couple other artists.
He dropped the gem on a second child on the way. He talked about Trump a little bit. Just a little bit.
He also showcased Shimino and Saba, two very, very great Chicago rappers that are not doing drill music. They're doing real hip hop. They are very lyrical artists.
And it was actually leaked that they went into the Dreamville Studios to record some tracks. Saba and Joey Badass, and I was gonna be hella surprised, and I was anticipating hearing that, but as you can see, the 18 tracks that had never quite made the cut.
And there's a bunch of other artists who were there at the sessions who are not on this album, like you said, Joey Badass. Kendrick only had kind of a homage, like he did a hook.
He
actually recorded some music with Cole and some other artists on this album. So I'm confused as to why those tracks weren't released. That's why I'm saying
Ludacris a lot of came these to songs, the studio. Akon came to the studio. Lupe came to the studio.
That's what I'm saying. These are some big artists that came to the studio, and we don't see any of those songs on the album. That's my gripe, is I wanted to know what happened to those songs. Are all those songs being...
And I do highly believe that some of those people came to rap, and then some of those people came to just help produce a mix.
Yeah, I can see that. But I feel like a lot of those people were definitely on the mic, and they definitely made songs, and we're not going to see those probably until the end of the year,
or at least had the intentions to. But again,
the next year we'll hear some of those songs.
At least had the intentions to. Yeah, they had the intentions to, but again, probably time restrictions.
They didn't want to make the album a 2-disc joint.
Yeah.
But overall, I think me and him agreed this is a 7.8 out of 10. We're gonna keep playing it. We're gonna enjoy it. And I don't think it's a 6. I feel like that's grossly underrated.
Yeah. But out of 18 songs, I would rotate 12 of them. I would rotate a strong 12 of them. And that's 2/3. But 12 of the 13 tracks I rotate. But yeah. So that's Avengers Dreamers. I love it. I love it. Constant progression. Dreamville. And nobody should sleep on them anymore. And if they are, they narcoleptic.
Better wake up. All right, y'all, we coming to the final topic, Cyberpunk 2077. This game's been on my radar for a long time. I believe it's been 6 or 7 years. CD Projekt Red, they made a subtle nod to this game even in their last game, The Witcher 3. They've hinted at this game for a long time. When they finally dropped an announcement trailer, it just made people foam at the mouth. People have been wanting this game. For those of you that don't know, it's a cyberpunk first-person RPG that takes place in a futuristic dystopian LA, California type setting. There's like 7 or 6 different districts that all have their, you know, very unique feels and aesthetics to them. And the gameplay looks phenomenal. Jay here, he just now is learning about the game.
I knew nothing of it.
So I wanted to talk to you guys and see what his first impressions was, just based off of going down the line, showing him the first trailer, showing him the gameplay, showing him the latest trailer from the E3, and what his impressions are, and see, based off of the type of gamer he is, what stood out to him versus me, as that being my genre, what stood out to me and why I'm so excited for that game.
Yeah, I mean, my synopsis is going to be very quick and short. So, me, I'm the kind of person that, you know, I want to have some kind of nostalgia attached to it, but obviously I don't. Hence this little experiment that we're doing. But when I saw the trailers, several of them, by the way, I was excited. I actually caught myself glued to the TV. It took just a very small amount of time to let it grow on me, but it did. I liked it. It was very interesting. It would be something that I would play had I never known about it. I would have never just, it would have been off my radar. But it's something that I definitely would play. My first impressions was, just based off of what I can compare it to from the games that I played, I saw some Grand Theft Auto and it fused with Detroit Becomes Human. And that was like something that definitely caught my eye. First person shooting game, just kind of, again, the detail to it was really cool. I liked the concepts. It kind of seemed like, to me, it seemed like an episode of Black Mirror come to life, basically. I have no issues with it. It's very futuristic, has a lot to do with robots. I was doing my best impressions of trying to come up with perfect examples. I was just making a lot of comparisons. You could think of a lot of robot movies, Terminator, Judge Dredd, or RoboCop, I Am Robots, and, you know, things of that nature. So like I said, very futuristic. A lot of futuristic games doesn't always catch my eye, but this one in particular does. I wish I knew the nostalgia of it in the past, just to have something to compare it to. But I'm gonna be a harsh critic, but I would catch myself turning down many games if it doesn't match my genre. But this one, I didn't think it would match my genre, but it definitely caught my eye and it was interesting, so I would play it. I really would, and I think I would enjoy the game, and I probably would waste several hours playing this game. So I liked it. I really did. I liked it.
Is that a so I got two questions for you. One is, what part of the game, whether it be the gameplay, the graphics, the things that you're able to do in the game? I know you got a glimpse of the character creation. We didn't really get to spend time looking at every aspect of the gameplay. You mostly saw cinematic trailers, but you did get to see gameplay aspects. So just based off of what you've seen, what stood out the most to you? And is that a must cop for you?
The gameplay is what stood out to me. The gameplay, I'm the type of person that has to have a very, very good storyline and plot to the game. Like, I have to be doing what I'm doing for a reason. I can't just be freelancing, doing whatever, God knows what, even though I do like side quests and side missions here and there. But I usually do that when I need to take a break. If I get to a level where, like, I'm experiencing difficulty trying to overcome that level, then let me go do a couple of side quests to cool off or whatever. But storyline and gameplay are the top two things. Like, the detail and the not the animation, but the graphics was top notch. But I think a lot of that is credible to your TV. the 4K is ridiculous, or at least it seems 4K. But it's the gameplay. It's the gameplay. The graphics definitely accentuated it. But the gameplay and the storylines would capture my attention. I would buy the game to play it. I can't give you an honest answer if it's a must cop, just because I just got introduced to it. But if I feel like if I watched a couple more trailers, if I watched a thorough gameplay and something else caught my eye that was like, wait a minute, what's that about? And I'm like, okay, now I'm really, really invested into it. Then I would make it a must-cop. But as of right now, if I saw it on the stores and I was just, you know, looking for something, I'm like, you know what? I did say I wanted to try that game. Let me pick it up and I would buy it.
As far as me, I've been following the game since it was first announced. I used to play D&D when I was a kid just because I grew up around a lot of kids from different backgrounds. And this kid had his dad's old D&D board with a bunch of little miniatures. The creator, Mike Pondsmith, he's an African-American guy. I never knew that there were other, like, I never really was around other black kids besides the one that used to play D&D with me, with the kid who had his dad's board and the rule books and stuff. I didn't know that there were, like, there was somebody that was playing D&D like that back in the day, and that was his inspiration for creating Cyberpunk 20. I forgot what the original is. Let's say this. I'm probably messing up the name of it, but I think it's Cyberpunk 2033. And this one's 2077, so it takes place way further in the future than the original board game tabletop RPG did. And so, me knowing about the original tabletop, never playing it, and just learning about the lore from reading some of the tabletop rules in the official book, and seeing how they brought this whole entire experience to life and created a first-person RPG, I'm very into those type of games. I grew up playing Deus Ex, a lot of the Elder Scrolls games got me into American RPGs. I was a JRPG kid very much, so the story stuck out to me, just like Jay said here. That story is very, very interesting and unique. You can tell that they're not skipping any details when it comes to making a dynamic story that's going to keep you playing. It's not just going to be a run and gun type of game. There's different types of gameplay aspects. You can choose to be stealthy, you can choose to be a diplomatic character, or you can choose to be a melee type of character. There's all different ways to play, and that's what I feel is key to the game being successful. The fact that a lot of people don't know about this genre, or a lot of people are alienated by it, and this game seems like it's accessible to all different people, whether or not you're a huge fan of first-person RPGs, whether you've played any Deus Ex or any type of any RPG really in the past, or whether you're not familiar with first-person games at all, even if you've never played a Call of Duty or you've never played a Battlefield, you'll be able to get into this game and get engrossed in the stories and learn about the characters. And the game looks very dynamic and it's beautiful. The animation and the graphics are top notch, and the 4K TV definitely brings out the details in it. And I'm really excited for it just because they're bringing it. It seems like a labor of love, and I'm really excited to see that. And I can't wait till it's fully realized and it's released next year, and we get to get our hands on it. And I guess we'll definitely be talking about it in the future.
I got one question for you.
What you got?
What about this? What about the new release of Cyberpunk 2077 that you would say? I'm trying to figure out how to word this correctly. What about this game that you believe captures the attention of the audience of this game nowadays? Like, basically what I'm trying to ask is, if you think about Cyberpunk back then, I can't, but you obviously can, and how it looks now, what areas do you think they did a good job adapting to, you know, the way gaming is now versus back then with this new release, because it's been some time?
Well, I think when Cyberpunk came out back in the day, games weren't as advanced as they are now. I'm pretty sure it was still like Nintendo era back then. So a lot of this game would have never been fully realized on a classic PC. And now we have games like Metal Gear Solid is a flawless story. And those games are very beautiful. And Hideo Kojima, he's a mastermind at putting together crazy narratives and deep, enriching stories, and combining that with fun action and unique gameplay aspects in creating very deep, enriching, dynamic characters. And so from back then till now, I don't think they had the capacity to ever dare to try to make a game like this until now with the technology that exists. And that's why I think it's not going to alienate an audience like back then, because people were scared to play RPGs because they would be labeled a nerd. Now nerd culture is so vast and wide, and there's so many people who are into it. If you would have released a show like Stranger Things back in the day, people would probably call you a nerd for watching something like that. If you would be, if you, nobody would watch Big Bang Theory back in the early 90s.
I don't know. I actually feel like those exact same shows will pop off. I honestly feel it that way. Just because we were more tied in with TVs than we were our phones back then. So like,
I feel like, well, I'm looking back in like things like Star Trek and
I see your point.
Yeah, like as far as like nerd culture being more accessible these days than it used to be.
Yeah.
People used to get made fun of and beat up for having interest in Dungeons and Dragons. So why would someone? Nobody would be brave enough to pick up a tabletop RPG if you were playing football,
right? But
now it looks like it's a badass thing to you know, this game looks cool.
Yeah, right.
It's accessible to everybody. Yeah. Everybody's gonna want to get their hands on this and play it, even if you don't. Like I said, even if you don't mess with RPGs, even if you've never played Final Fantasy, even if you've never even heard of The Witcher before, this game stands out amongst a lot of games that are out now because it's accessible to everybody, and that's what makes it so unique.
Fair enough.
And with that being said, I think we're going to end things here. Thank you for tuning in. It's your boy Nico signing out with my boy right here.
It's boy Jay also signing out on the Shadow Realm podcast.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Peace.